The Business of Biotech is produced by Life Science Connect and its community of learning, solving, and sourcing resources for biopharma decision makers. If you're working on biologics process development and manufacturing challenges, you need to swing by bioprocessonline.com. If you're trying to stay ahead of the cell or gene therapy curve, visit cellandgene.com. When it's time to map out your clinical course, let clinicalleader.com help. And if optimizing outsourcing decisions is what you're after, check out outsourcepharma.com. We're Life Science Connect, and we're here to help. Venture philanthropy has remained one of the few bright spots in an otherwise gloomy biotech funding scene. Couple that with rising unmet medical needs in neurodegeneration and the recent regulatory activity in the Alzheimer's therapeutic space, and you've got a situation where the Alzheimer's Drug Discovery Foundation's stock and relevance are steadily rising. The ADDF is a venture philanthropy fund founded by the Lauder family, as in Estée, and supported generously by the likes of Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, and the Dolby and Schwab families. Its mission is to accelerate the discovery of drugs to prevent, treat, and cure Alzheimer's disease, and it does that by investing in biotechs developing Alzheimer's therapeutics, much like a venture capitalist would, then directing its proceeds back into the fund. I'm Matt Piller. This is The Business of Biotech, and the opportunity to sit down with ADDF Chief Financial Officer and Head of Mission-Related Investments Karen Harris in San Francisco was one I didn't take lightly. Her perspective on Alzheimer's therapeutic progress, the market, what's fundable, and why is one of a kind. Let's give it a listen.
I want to start with the foundation. Like, I want to get an understanding of, of the mission and the venture philanthropy model. It's not a, so typically my interviews are with biotech CEOs, you know, the companies that are more than likely interested in partnering with you. I've only had a couple of venture philanthropy leaders on the show in the past, so it's fascinating to me, though. I love the concept. So tell me about that.
It's great to be here. There are a handful of venture philanthropies, but we're definitely a pretty unique animal. So the mission of the Alzheimer's Drug Discovery Foundation is to accelerate the development of drugs to prevent, treat, and hopefully eventually cure Alzheimer's disease. And when we started, we were set up as what is a venture philanthropy by our founders, which were the Ronald and Leonard Lauder, and then Dr. Howard Fillit, who's still there as our co-founder and chief science officer. And they set us up as a venture philanthropy, which means instead of giving grants to academia and to biotechs, we actually invest in them. So we invest in biotechs the same way a VC would invest in a biotech. We buy preferred stock, or we buy convertible debt or royalty arrangements sometimes. And with academia, we have royalty arrangements. And what happens is the money that we get back from returns goes right back into the mission. But I think donors seem to really like the model and like to know that their money is being used efficiently and that we are getting some return. And then that gets plowed right back into ADDF.
Direct. I mean, the donors have to like the fact that there's a direct influence on the real work, right?
Absolutely. And it gives us the opportunities to work with biotechs, because it's kind of awkward if you're a nonprofit to be handing money to biotech companies. So I think this venture philanthropy model where we invest in the biotechs is just a better way to go about it for that type of thing.
Well, so, and you're the chief financial officer there. Tell me about that role. Like, what does the CFO's, sort of illustrate what the CFO's role is there?
I feel like I have two jobs. So I'm the CFO, and then I'm the head of mission-related investing. And as the CFO, it's really my job to make sure that the donor's money gets placed as efficiently and as well as possible into these Alzheimer's companies in order to accelerate a cure.
No pressure there.
Yeah. We're so lucky in that the Lauder family at the end of 2022 gave us a $200 million gift to cover our operating expenses for the next 15 to 20 years. So I take that very seriously to really steward their money to make sure it lasts for our operating costs as long as possible. But it's a great position for a CFO to be in so that I don't have to worry about my operating costs, and all the donors' money that gets donated to us goes to straight to the science, not to our operating costs. So this fact that all your money goes to research, I think, is a very attractive thing.
Yeah, that is fantastic.
So that's the CFO job. The head of mission-related investing is, since we do invest in biotechs, we have to structure the investments and negotiate the deals with the biotech companies. And so I do all of the structuring and the negotiations of those deals. And the reason that works so well is I have an investment banking background. And so I'm able to use a lot of that for structuring these deals. When I was starting out in investment banking, I worked on a lot of biotech IPOs. And so a lot of that knowledge is very helpful when dealing with these biotech companies. And it's such a treat to work with these companies. They are just so dedicated and they just don't give up. It's been hard to raise money this year. And I'm really just always super impressed by their commitment.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly, I mean, you know, I've interviewed hundreds of them, biotech execs, and, you know, the commitment, the altruism, it's all on full display. It seems like that's even ratcheted up a notch in the Alzheimer's space, because so many people are, you know, have been affected by it and have personal experience.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think almost anybody you talk to has a mother-in-law or a sister or an aunt or somebody who's been touched by Alzheimer's. And I think the fact that, you know, for 20 to 30 years, there was no drug approved. And now we have two that were one that has been approved by the FDA and another from Eli Lilly that's about to be. And so it's a really exciting time in the Alzheimer's field right now.
Sure is. Yeah. You you mentioned that prior to ADDF, you were in investment banking. And I'm curious about that. I looked at your, you know, your background in prep for the interview, and it's intriguing to me. You were in pretty big name investment banking after you earned your Columbia undergrad and in economics and your Stanford MBA in finance. When I look at your career, at least on paper, on LinkedIn, right, the latter half of it seems like it's very focused on endeavors that are far from, you know, getting rich and making rich people richer.
Yes.
So, tell me about that. I look at Mount Sinai Adolescent Health Center, East Harlem Tutorial Program, and now the ADDF. Tell me about sort of
that. Yeah. So I left UBS in 2012 to join a hedge fund. And after a while, you know, several months, I really came to the conclusion that the world did not need this other hedge fund. We have enough hedge funds, and I didn't really feel that we were going to be so much better than anybody else. And my dad had done a lot of nonprofit work after he retired. And so I investigated, I took some courses at NYU, New York University in philanthropy. And I liked it. So I decided I would try it out. And I think that I really felt that I wanted to do mission-related work at that point. And I first went into development. And I don't really know why I did that. I think I did that because I liked the classes, which is a very silly way to pick anything. And I worked at the Mount Sinai Adolescent Health Center, eventually as their director of development. And I it was very interesting. I liked it, but I missed finance. And so then I moved to the East Harlem Tutorial Program, which is charter schools in East Harlem, and was the CFO there, and then ultimately got recruited to ADDF. But I'm very happy to have worked at these social services organizations for several years.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's fulfilling, much more fulfilling than running a hedge fund. The ADDF recruitment, how did that come to pass?
You know, it was COVID and I just got a call from a recruiter, and I think I had met her once before, and she just called, and I had interviews completely online. And I think it was a year before I met the CEO in person, because it was like smack in the middle of the really bad COVID.
Yeah.
But I thought this would be super interesting, and it was different, but the whole investment part of it was really interesting to me.
For sure. Yeah. Kind of brought you back to that that world that you had been in.
Yeah. It's kind of the perfect job, because I get to really match the investment banking skills as well as the CFO skills. So I really can't think of a more perfect job for me.
Yeah, that's great. So I want to talk a little bit more about ADDF and what it's supporting. As you know, the bulk of our audience are biotech execs and CEOs, many of whom founders, many of whom worked in the Alzheimer's space. You guys support the advance of both diagnostics and therapeutics?
So yeah, we're involved in diagnostics, therapeutics, and prevention. So those are really our three pillars. And in the therapeutic space, we are investing in companies that are developing drugs based on the biology of aging. So drugs that will treat the underlying diseases of aging, with the idea that if we can treat that, then we can ultimately reduce Alzheimer's, because Alzheimer's ultimately is a disease of aging. And we decided about 10 years ago not to focus on amyloid, which is what these new drugs are, because pharma was focusing on amyloid and pouring tons of money into it. So we wanted to invest where we thought that our money would be more useful in novel ideas. And as it turns out, where the science has moved now is towards the biology of aging, because these amyloid drugs are, you know, shown they reduce amyloid, but I still think the jury's out as to how effective. You know, maybe they'll slow cognitive decline by 30%, but that's not enough. And we think that a lot of these other ideas are going to come to fruition. And ultimately, it's going to be a combination therapy or precision medicine that is going to cure Alzheimer's, much in the way the cancer space does it with their immunotherapy. So we really taken, my CEO likes to say shots on goal.
Yeah.
And we've taken a lot of shots on goal. And our co-founder and chief science officer is an absolute, we call him the truffle hound, because he just seems to be able to seek out the most interesting biotech companies. And we've done quite well with some of them. We invested early on in a program that was licensed by Amivid or by Avid Pharmaceuticals. And then the company was bought by Eli Lilly. And it was the first PET scan to actually be able to identify amyloid, because before that, there was no way to really tell if you had Alzheimer's, except for either a cognitive interview, which doesn't, you know, that's not very scientific,
right,
or else an autopsy after death. So that was one of the things that we invested in early on, as well as blood tests for the diagnosis. And I think now with these anti-amyloid drugs, there's going to be a need to figure out who has Alzheimer's in an easier way than the PET scan. And I think a lot of blood tests are being developed now, some already marketed. So that's diagnostics as well. And that's the diagnostics part of the business. And there we have $100 million that was given, donated to us from the Gates, from Bill Gates and other philanthropists, Leonard Lauder. And we are using that money to try to accelerate the detection and diagnosis of Alzheimer's, with the thought that the earlier you can detect it, the better off you're going to be, and the more probable that you could get a treatment that would work. Yeah. We have invested in therapeutics this year, $34 million. We'll invest $45 million next year. And then we have the Diagnostic Accelerator money to invest. But our biomarker team and our therapeutics team are, you know, talk all the time and are completely sort of married at the hip, because the two really go together.
Yeah. Is the truffle hunting more difficult on the therapeutic side than it is on the diagnostic side?
It's different. And I think therapeutics take a lot longer to come to market, so you have to wait longer. But I think the returns are ultimately better in the end. So I think if somebody comes up with the therapeutic for Alzheimer's that really works, that's going to make a lot more money than the diagnostic test that told you that a person would have Alzheimer's. But I do think that it's quicker to market the diagnostic tools, and it's absolutely essential. If you think about it, like, imagine if we didn't have a way to tell whether you have high blood pressure.
Right.
And with it really helps in the clinical trials, because they used to do clinical trials and a quarter of the people wouldn't even have Alzheimer's because there was no way to really know. They just guessed. So it's very important when you're doing the clinical trials, and also when you're measuring the endpoint to see if your therapy is effective, to have a good biomarker to be able to actually know whether your drug is doing the appropriate work.
Sure. And as those drugs become more precision, presumably, those diagnostic tools are going to be key, because precision drugs and their correlation to stage of diagnosis are, you know, they've got to work hand in hand.
Absolutely. And that is why the Diagnostics Accelerator is trying to fund, you know, novel biomarkers. So there might be a biomarker for inflammation, for vascular disease, because these things are other aspects of Alzheimer's that people have and will ultimately need to be measured.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of the therapeutic focus, mm-hmm. do you have any favorite horses in the race in terms of modalities?
Yes. So as I said, we invest in companies that are focused on the biology of aging. And in terms of the stage that we're interested in, it's typically now the IND enabling stage or proof of concept, phase one proof of concept trials, and then early phase two, because that's where our money is going to be the most meaningful. Mm-hmm. You know, then later for the phase three trials, they're going to need hundreds of millions of dollars. And we don't have that money. So we're trying to invest in ideas that ultimately can raise future money from the VCs and from pharma, and be able to continue on after our donation's done. But we do give a lot of follow-on donations as well.
Mm-hmm. When you first survey opportunities or entertain mm-hmm. opportunities, as well, you know, let me stop there and focus there for a minute. Like, are you typically hunting, or are you typically being courted, or is it a combination of the two?
Mm-hmm. It's a combination of both. So we are always looking for areas of our portfolio of investments where maybe we're lacking, like, oh, maybe, you know, here's an idea where we don't have any drugs being tested for this in our portfolio, like maybe it's gene therapy. Mm-hmm. So we would be, you know, actively looking. But also we have several RFPs that we do, and we have a lot of incoming requests. You can imagine in this down market, all the demand. And what I would say about our model is, while we do want the returns that VCs get, we don't have limited partners. And we focus, the most important thing for us is the science, and we hope to make a good return, but we're not so much focused on the returns as we are on the science. And so in this difficult market, we've been able to fund companies that have trouble finding money anywhere else. And what we found is that our scientific diligence is so admired at ABDF that often we're like the stamp of approval that enables these companies to get future funding. And a lot of the time, people will say, well, can we sign your contract early because the next venture partner won't come in until you've actually signed. So we see a lot of that.
Mm, yeah, that's interesting. What is the scientific validation component look like? You have like a board?
Yeah, so we have, I'm going to get the number wrong, but I think it's like we have like 19 PhD scientists on board. And so the first investigation is an internal one. Mm-hmm. And then if we like an idea and we think it will fit well in our portfolio, then we have outside reviewers review it. And these are prominent people in the Alzheimer's field. And then after that, it goes to our scientific investment committee who, study the idea and vote to approve or not to approve. So that is our scientific method. And, you know, obviously over the years, we've developed such an expertise in Alzheimer's specifically that, I think a lot of the VCs really admire that knowledge.
Yeah. As far as scientific analysis of potential partners goes, have you noticed any trends or do you have any preferences in terms of, you mentioned gene therapy, for instance, mm-hmm. like, you know, is small molecule more attractive than a mm-hmm. biologic, more attractive than a gene therapy? Like any trends there, or are you pretty agnostic?
I think we are pretty agnostic. It's sort of this, we think there are going to be a lot of targets. And we like to have a good range of things. A couple of companies, for example, like we invest in Lexeo Therapeutics, which happens to have just presented at the JP Morgan conference. And they're a genetic medicine company, a clinical stage genetic medicine. So that's one company that we invested in early in 2014, where we actually invested when the idea was at Weill Cornell University. Mm-hmm. And then it somehow got into, it became a company, Lexeo, or Lexeo bought it. I don't know how. And then, it just went public. So we made another investment in 2020 and now it's gone public. So that's one company. And, you know, it's very rewarding to us when we identify something in 2014 and then it becomes part of a public company. So that's sure. very interesting for us. We have one company that does a monoclonal antibody for inflammatory fibrin, which is supposed to be bad for the neurons and cognitive decline. So that's another company we invested in 2019 and now again in 2023. And they are doing their Series A right now and are trying to fund a phase two study.
Yeah, that's great. You talked a little bit about how ADDS support is seen as a sought after stamp of approval. Do you look for? You might have touched on this, but I'm curious about how it's maybe changed in the recent, mm-hmm. the recent financial climate. Do you look for companies that have like, you know, your reputation is often determined by the company you keep, right? Mm-hmm. Do you look for companies that have specific business development support from specific firms or even pharma companies?
Well, we typically would invest before the pharma companies would come in, and we're really trying to get these companies ready for pharma. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say so much. I wouldn't really say that so much. I think we're investing 100% based on what we think is the validity of the science.
Yeah. All right. Once you validated the science and strike up a partnership, is it pretty, maybe not monetarily, but is it pretty cookie cutter? Like, is it pretty automated?
Yeah. So once the science is validated, then it comes to we negotiate the deal, and then it comes to our investment committee. So then we do have an investment committee that has to approve the terms of the deal. And they're really the ones who want to see that we're getting, quote, venture-like returns, and that we've actually structured and negotiated a good deal. Mm-hmm. And it's actually not cookie cutter, because ADDF, we don't invest directly. Well, we do. We buy preferred stock, but that's that money that we give a company has to go to a specific project with the budget and a work plan. And so we're in very close touch helping the companies design the projects and design the clinical trials, and we help them with IP and with business plans. So we're having a very close relationship even before we approve the proposal. And then once it's approved and once they start working, doing the work, we stay in touch with them very closely to see how it's going and how we can set them up for success. And even after, we've done a lot of follow-on deals this year. Mm-hmm. And we tend to like to do that and to really help our companies prosper.
That's cool. What is the sort of that sort of relationship management aspect? Are there like customer relationship managers at ADDF that work with these folks, or is it?
We're a nonprofit. No, it's really the science team that work with them. I work with them if there are any finance related issues or anything related to the structure of the deal. Do they need an extension on their convertible note? You know, mm-hmm. those kind of things. But the scientists are really working with them on a day-to-day basis. So with regards to how the project is going.
Yeah. The venture philanthropy model in general, how has the recent economic headwinds mm-hmm. impacted the venture philanthropists in general? Are you fairly insulated, or is it impacted?
Well, what I would say is it's actually made the venture philanthropy model that much more important. And we do a lot of what I call bridge financing, which is, say you have a company and they needed to raise their Series A by January, or else they're going to run out of money and can't complete the next trial. And here it's happened quite a number of times in this market where, the companies are unable to complete the Series A on time. They just can't get the investors. And so we provide bridge financing, which is usually in the form of a convertible note, which is debt that's going to convert into equity, and basically bridge them over to tide them over to when they're able to finally close their preferred round. And we've done a lot of that this year. And we just need to make careful that the company does have enough cash to continue on and finish our project, and ultimately will have results that will draw in the money of venture capital mm-hmm. and of pharma potentially, or they could go to the public markets. But I think that ADDF's stamp of approval and this bridge financing, it's something we can do, because once again, we don't need the venture return. We really want the science to progress.
Is bridge financing a risky proposition?
It is a risky proposition because you don't know if the Series A or B or C is actually going to get done. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's definitely a risky proposition, and ADDF can take that risk when others don't want to. And I think that ADDF, by taking that risk, helps venture firms feel comfortable about investing. But it is definitely a risk, and the investment committee is very careful about making sure that that company has a plan to be able to stay in business and continue and finish our project. So usually what we like to see is that there's some inflection point coming up where there are going to be results announced, and therefore they can draw in additional capital.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is your general sense for, obviously in this environment, Karen, like everyone's sunshine and roses, mm-hmm. it's JP Morgan, you know, everyone's happy. But there, I'm picking up on some genuine sentiment, that things are improving, mm-hmm. you know, what's your take?
Yeah, I think that it has been extremely difficult. It's been a very bad market. The public markets have been terrible. The IPO markets are pretty closed up until maybe the fourth quarter of this year. And it's really hard to get venture investors to invest now because they weren't able to take their companies public. So they're having to put money into their existing companies rather than new companies. So as a new company, to get a lead investor is really, really hard right now. I think things are looking up. There's been an uptick in the biotech index, like in the last few weeks, really, with a lot of mergers that have been announced. And what's interesting for us is we've seen two mergers, one from Merck of Caraway Therapeutics and one from AbbVie of a company called Cerevel, both CNS companies. And those are among the most risky. And so that leads me to believe that somehow the valuations are low enough that the market is going to turn. So we've seen a lot of M&A. There's been a lot of M&A announced at JP Morgan, mm-hmm. and interest rates are projected to come down. And I think if that happens, then it'll be a big help to these biotechs, and ultimately people will start investing again. I mean, the valuations, I would say that the boom years of 20 and 21 were maybe a little over exuberant. And the valuations were too high. And a lot of companies were able to go public that shouldn't be public companies, mm-hmm. that are now trading at a dollar a share. So I think that there's that overhang in the market. But I do think we've seen two IPOs of CNS-related companies. One is Lexeo, another is Neumora Therapeutics. And there again, you know, they're both trading now above issue price. So that leads me to believe that the market is going to get better. I think it's going to take a little while, but I think by the end of 2024 and 2025, things are going to be better.
And how does that, like, how do you envision that hopeful improvement impacting ADDF? Like, what does that do for you?
One thing that does for us is to help us get returns. So basically, we call them mission-related returns. So if the public markets turn and a lot of our companies can do initial public offerings, we typically, once an investment becomes liquid, we sell. We make sure we sell in a way that we won't hurt the stock price of the company. So very slowly over time. But, you know, we believe that once we gain liquidity, we should sell and then make investments in other science. And so, you know, I think that we will see a lot of M&A where we will get returns, or we will see IPOs where we're going to get returns. So we're hoping for that. That money gets plowed right back into the science. And also with the new drug approvals for Alzheimer's, we're seeing an increased interest in just CNS related work. And I'm seeing from the VCs an interest to get educated on the neurodegenerative disease. And we call them neurocurious VCs. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of VCs wouldn't invest in the neuro world because it was too risky. And I think maybe they're going to start coming in now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the association with anti-aging, but the anti-aging space, I mean, that's a hot space right now. And I can see, you know, the VC appetite in that space increasing as things turn around too. So it's a good corollary, right? Like it's
The anti-aging space is really interesting. And I was hoping to hear more about it at JP Morgan. We didn't, but I think, you know, everybody seems to be interested in anti-aging. It seems to be the thing right now. There was recently our CEO attended a conference in Saudi Arabia by a fund called Havolution, which is the Saudi Crown Prince's fund that's going to invest $1 billion a year in anti-aging. And we are trying to get some of the sovereign wealth money to go towards Alzheimer's, which is a disease of aging. So we are trying to get some of that aging money into Alzheimer's.
Yeah, very good. When you come to an investor conference like this, you know, you're in a unique position, CFO of a venture philanthropy fund at ADDF. What's your goal? What's your MO here?
So I'm very interested to see what the public companies are doing in the neurodegenerative space. So I make sure to see those companies, you know, to see Biogen, who is introducing one of their Alzheimer's drug, and Lilly to talk about their drug. So I'm interested in seeing those companies. I'm also very interested in understanding what they think, when they think the market's going to return, because, you know, ADDF can have an opinion, but I'm very interested in the investor's opinion as to when the market's going to come back. And then I've been meeting a lot of the CEOs of either companies we already fund or companies that are in the process of applying to get funding from us. So I've been meeting with a lot of them, as well as some people on the venture side, because one thing we try to do for our companies is to get additional venture money into them. So it's very helpful at ADDF to have venture connections so that we can help our companies raise money.
Yeah. What's the appropriate way for a company who's interested in working with you what's the channel to get the conversation started?
So I would say that, you know, we're interested in companies focused on the biology of aging at the clinical stage. And if you fit that model, reach out to our scientists. We have several RFPs, so look at our website. And we really do encourage people to start the conversation. We're interested in unique, innovative science. And our scientists are always happy to talk to you.
Good. If I were a better interviewer, what would I have asked you that I didn't about ADDF?
Let me think about that.
Well, if you have to think about it, I must have done a pretty good job.
Yeah, you know, I think you did a great job, and I'm not sure what else you could have asked me, but I think it's been a great discussion, and I'm very happy for people to know more about venture philanthropy. And also, you know, I want to really help our biotech companies who are doing research in Alzheimer's. It's such an important area. Mm-hmm. And these biotech companies are just, you know, they never stop working. And it's just very impressive.
It is. And the work that you're doing is very impressive too. I just recalled that, as I said, I don't often have venture philanthropists on the show, but the last time I did was a couple of years ago. I think it was the JDDF, Katie Elliott. Katie had all this fascinating conversation with her as well. I admire the work that folks like you do.
Yeah.
And I encourage you to keep up that work, and I wish you all the best success in 24.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate having this conversation. It's very fun.
Yeah, we'll get back together and do it again. You know, maybe the next wave of Alzheimer's approval. Mm-hmm. We'll get ADF back.
That would be very interesting.
Break some of that.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to the next approval. So absolutely.
Great. Well, Karen Harris, pleasure to meet
you.
Thank you for coming on the show.
I'm Matt Piller, and you just listened to The Business of Biotech, the weekly podcast dedicated to the builders of biotech. We drop a new episode with a new exec every Monday morning. And I'd like you to join our community of subscribers at bioprocessonline.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe to our never spammy, always insightful monthly newsletter at bioprocessonline.com/BOB. If you have feedback or topic and guest suggestions, hit me up on LinkedIn and let's chat. And as always, thanks for listening.